Are you thinking about updating your home? At Wirtz Floor & Home in Spring Green, we offer beautiful flooring, custom cabinets, stunning countertops, and window treatments to bring your space together. And when it comes to comfort, we've got you covered there too. From quality mattresses and adjustable bed bases to our ultra comfort wellness chairs. These aren't just power lift recliners. They're fully customizable, designed to support your body and help you truly relax. Stop in, sit down, and experience the difference for yourself at Wirtz Floor & Home.
Attention Crawford, Richland, and Sauk counties. Big Hook is now serving your area. We're the last locally owned small town dumpster company around. Proud to serve our neighbors with top line equipment, dependable drivers, and unbeatable customer service. Whether you're a business owner, a farmer, or a homeowner, Big Hook has you covered. Call Mike, the owner, today at 608-769-4167 or visit BigHookLacrosse.com. Big Hook, local, reliable, and ready to haul.
Our morning show visit continues at WRCO. Good to have live in the studio Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley District Administrator, who's here to talk about all the good things going on in the valley. Spring sports underway, and here we go. It's raining and cold.
Right? It is raining and cold, but it's a great time to see the kids get out there and have fun. After being cooped up, and we had lots of cold days and snow days and all the things of staying inside, it's fun to see the kids get outside. I know we had kind of a false spring early, too, so they were out and then they were back inside and now they're back out. And it's fun to see, you know, our baseball fields get used, to see our softball fast pitch fields get used. The track is up and running. All the kids are practicing or going to those events. I believe there's track tonight at both Sauk and at Richland Center. So it'll be fun for our track kids tonight if the rain holds out. We've got girls soccer that's being strong. Love to see those kids out there on that field. And then we've got golf. So kids are involved. And I always say, the more involved your kid is, the better they do in school. There's an entire team of people then pushing at your kid to be academically sound, to make sure that they're keeping their behaviors good, to make sure they're thinking like a team. And that just helps a learner hold themselves accountable. So we're excited for kids to be in activities. Those are the outside ones beyond things like choir and FFA and Skills USA just had a great competition, and the art club and the Spanish club and all the great things that kids do. So it's fun to see the kids involved in everything in school, but outside of school as well.
Your athletic director, Jamie Heglin, everybody that helps him, they earn their keep in the spring trying to keep everything straight.
They sure do. If you think of each event, and that event has to be scheduled in, but you got to make the setting or the environment ready. So you got to make sure that the baseball field is ready. So you got to drag it. You got to make sure that it's ready for everything, but you also have to hire the officials. You've got to make sure that all the checks are there for the officials. You got to make sure the announcer's ready. You got to make sure that the radio station knows where they're going. You got to make sure that all of those things are prepped and prepared for that one event. And so that takes time, that takes money, that takes, I guess, an incredible amount of organization. And that's one of the events happening for that sport, but we've got five different things going on at that time. Some are away, some are at home. So yeah, Mr. Jamie Heglin, our activities director, who also is our junior high principal, is a very busy man. He does a great job. He keeps things moving and cruising, and we just really appreciate the work that he's doing. He does, like you say, earn his keep.
Last week, the election was held, the spring election. Were there any contested races for the school board?
We had no contested races. We had two incumbents that ran again. So Pam Gauger, who represents Arena, ran again, and she's on for three more years. And we're thankful for Pam's leadership and everything that she brings. She's a mom and a community member and a business owner. So she's got great representation on our school board. We're just so thankful for what she does. We also had another incumbent, Ms. Sarah Karstensen, who's a great parent, a great advocate, again, a great member of the Lone Rock community. So she comes and represents. So we're excited to have three more years for her. And then we have a new member to our school board, Mr. Aaron Mays, and he's going to represent Arena. And we're excited for him. He had two kids already graduate, but he has two more that are in our district. So it's always good to see these parents that are highly engaged as a parent be on your school board, because they see both sides of the coin. And I'm really excited to have all three of them be a part of our school board again. It is a little sad for me. The best boss I ever had retired. And now she's not retiring from her work, but she retired from our school board. So I always want to congratulate and also thank a public servant as they leave our school board mission. And so Kathy Jennings, who did represent ARENA, who has been on our board for 12 different years, 10 of which have been the president, is stepping down. Her kids are graduated. She's starting to get to the grandma stage rather than the parent stage. And it's just heartfelt that I say she comes with balance. She heard both sides of every situation. She was very enthusiastic but kind. She knew when to insert her voice but also when to listen. She just created a tremendous balance on our board that I think set a tone. And she was just a fantastic leader. Now, people, remember, she's a public citizen running a district as the president with her team, of course, on our 9-member board. But she did an incredible job. And a huge thank you to Kathy Jennings and all school board members that are out there putting in a ton of time. They're getting paid a pittance for the amount of time they put into researching, reading, working on policy, and then coming to meetings twice a month to make sure that the school district has a public service in our schools. So, Kathy, if you're hearing this or you get a recording of this, just know I was proud to work with you. And anybody that knows Kathy Jennings, reach out to the lady. She did incredible work, and we're just so thankful for what she's done. So, school boards in general, they serve a huge role in our communities. If you want a public school, you have to have a governing board. And in our public school system, a governing board provides oversight for the regular public noticed meetings. Nothing is hidden. Everything's above the table. So we're doing so for the public, with the public, to make sure that they understand it. One of the things that a district school board does is evaluate me as the administrator. They've got to hold me to my responsibilities, to my strategic plan, to making sure that my administrative team does the work that they're supposed to do. So they're my boss. They adopt and update any policy that comes from the state or the federal guidelines. They approve our budget annually, but also within committee. They oversee critical contacts. They advocate for River Valley. And then they also make very strategic decisions on things like referenda, like operational, like things that we have to do. For example, with our recent closure of the little elementary up in Plain, that took years of planning to get ready for that decision. And then they work through that decision as a board, and they collectively then work together to make that decision work and get the next steps for the district to happen. So again, Kathy, great work. To anybody on a school board, great work. Thank you for what you do for our communities. And again, a lot of new people in new roles, so we'll be transitioning them into new spots.
You talk about Kathy's 12 years, too, and all the things that happened during that time. We're talking about COVID in 2020, and the board had to make some decisions there. And, you know, then you had your referendum that passed last year.
Yeah. So Kathy, I think, was a part of, if I can remember all these stats correctly, maybe 9 different referenda. 3 different governors, 4 different superintendents, 5 different business managers. She was through the pandemic, where the entire government of the United States went into the state level and then was involved in school closures. She was a part of the closing of Plain, Lone Rock, and ARENA Elementary so that we would consolidate more, as we all in Wisconsin have declining enrollment. So she has been a part of an incredible amount of work in the last 12 years, and she's done most of it with a big smile. And she's done it while listening to people that didn't agree but tried to respect the position of the district. We don't all agree on things, but at the River Valley School Board level, I see people disagree and debate with respect. And I think that's what we want from all of our village boards, from all our county boards, from all our state boards. We don't expect everybody to agree. There's a fine art in debate where we each get to have our own opinion, and then we get to bring it forward, and then the collective whole has to make a decision. And once that decision is made, then we have to stick to it and look at that and how it applies to the strategic planning of that organization. And so I think Kathy's done that. She's done it with grace. But so do other boards. They do it with grace. And I think where people get ticked off is when they don't know what's going on, or they feel like things haven't been done transparently, or sides have not had a chance to be heard. And I just feel really lucky. I've got one of the best jobs in the district because I work in one of the best districts in the state, where people don't agree always, but we respectfully move ahead, understanding that that's our mission for the kids of River Valley.
I've mentioned it before, but sometimes you see those votes and it's not unanimous. even if it's something I agree on, I appreciate that because it's somebody thinking, you know, what they think is best for the people that they're voting for.
So. Absolutely. Any organization. I can't imagine that you and Hank would sit at the table and agree with everything that's going on, right? So, but we all have the mission or the strategic plan in mind. We all know that we want what's good for kids, that we have to stay within our budget, that we need to meet the federal and state guidelines, and all of those things get to move ahead. And it's not just rubber stamping. There's a lot of big conversations that happen. So again, if you want to be involved on a school board, go to a school board meeting, get involved in your community, be a part of that democratic process, because I truly believe that's what America's built on, our opinions. And our opinions focused into a strategic process so that we can all have our voice, but also move ahead as a collective one.
Also going on this spring, the dreaded testing season for the students.
Well, kids don't love it, that's for sure. Teachers don't love it, that's for sure. District administrators don't love it, but that's for sure. But in order for our state to be measured against other states, you have to understand that there are strategic and standardized tests that happen at many different grade levels. These are the tests that happen in the spring. So every spring, every school, well, public school district, has to go through a mandated testing structure. And so it's called the Wisconsin Forward Exam. Now, Phil, I'm getting old because I can remember the Badger exam and I can remember the Iowa mandated exam that I took as a little kid where I got out a pencil and filled in bubbles and all those things. So way back in the day, we all did this, but it didn't have quite the political feel that it does now because we use a very big comparison on these. But in grades 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, everybody takes an ELA, an English Language Arts test, and a math test. And those get measured then by late fall. We hear how the kids have done. They take it in 4th grade and 8th grade in science. And then we also take a 4th, 8th grade, and 10th grade test in social studies. So now everybody out there in listening land goes, well, so big deal. What's the big deal? You all have to take a test. Just hush up and take them. It's going to be fine. It is. You want to do well, though, right? Because we have things like the Wisconsin Realtors Association that will take our data and our test results and compare it to a district next to us and say, hey, you should buy a house over here because they have a higher test score. So not that they're the enemy. I'm not trying to make the realtors the enemy, but I am trying to say these are things that we can use as comparable data to other districts to make sure that we are meeting the federal guidelines or the state guidelines for subject matter. Some people will say, well, where's the test here for agriculture? Where's the test here for maybe tech ed? Where's the test on social emotional? Where's the test on gym? Is there a FIAD education test? There's not. In the United States, we measure a lot of reading and writing. We measure a lot of arithmetic. So it kind of goes back to the old, you know, one-room schoolhouse mission. But then we have a couple other tests in science and social studies. Those tests help us move ahead in our strategic plan to make sure that we're meeting what we need kids to do. Basically, the student proficiency on the standards. That's what we're working on. Now, there's other tests that we also have to take. So all juniors, the grade 11 kids, they have to take the ACT. That's required in Wisconsin. It used to be, again, I'm old, back in the olden days, you only took it if you were going to a four-year institution. Because UW-Madison or La Crosse or Stout or wherever would need to know your ACT score. Now, all 11th grade kids take this exam. Some kids could give two hoots on how they do on this, but we all get measured by it. So we try to make sure the kids give two hoots because we need them to be measured appropriately. And again, that's looking at readiness for college skills. I would venture to say that if a kid was going to go work at Cardinal and end up as a supervisor, we'd also want them to have good readiness in math, reading, science, and writing. So I think it's a valuable measure whether they're going to college or not. So we have to make sure that the kids know that. So that happens in 11th grade. That's your ACT. Then there's something called the pre-ACT that now the state has required us to give. So that's in 9th and 10th grade, where the kids are getting ready for the ACT, and that measures college readiness a little bit earlier. Okay, so now we've got the forward, now we've got the ACT, now we've got the pre-ACT, but what if possibly your main language is not English and you're new to this country and you need to learn kind of that English proficiency. Well, there's a separate test for that. That's called the access testing. So that's there for English language learners. There's also special education testing that's out there. Those are different things. And then we have alternatives for all of these for anybody that has a learning disability or has a different way of learning in their testing. I guess when we call it testing season, it's because it takes almost 3 to 4 weeks for a district to get through all of these required things. And there's a window of opportunity here that the state sets for us. So everybody in the state of Wisconsin in this window of time is taking these required tests. So if your kid says, hey, I got to take a test this evening or tomorrow at school, I need to make sure I've got a water bottle, and I guess they told me I need to go to bed tonight. Yes, you do need to go to bed tonight so that you can come back and maybe be a little bit more aware. There's also tests on civics, so that we give the basic civic exam, which is basically your citizenship test that we give to all 11th graders as well. And then there's other things that are there too. So I guess just know that when your district is working hard and they have to spend money on something like a computer, and somebody says, well, back in our day, we didn't have to have computers. All these exams are on computers. That's what kids have to take them all on. And those are mandated skills that come to us from the state. And we don't get extra money just because we have to give this test. We don't get extra money because we have to give the test on a computer device. So there's a lot of mandates that come out that just you and your community have to assume that we will do. We will pay the money on it. We'll get the kids prepped for it, and we'll do our very best.
Your IT department, everybody. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't keep my own laptop running without, you know, yep. When you're talking about 400 of them or whatever it is.
Yeah. So when you think about a kindergartner, that's a really good point. A kindergartner is getting used to like an iPad where they're using their finger on the pad screen to make sure they're manipulating, but they don't really get into typing, into keystrokes yet, as we say. But by first and second grade, kids are getting used to a keyboard. And they're getting used to like moving a mouse, and they're getting used to clicking on something that proceeds to the next thing. So they click on this and the arrow takes me to the next question, and I can read something maybe, or I can pick a picture. And that is getting kids prepped for it. I'm not sure I like that. Just because, again, I'll say it, I'm old, but I think it is something that kids are getting prepared for as early as kindergarten in getting into how technology will make the testing more efficient. So that's there. And then you've got to make sure that all those devices are ready. So when you bring up an IT team that, you know, for a district like us that's got about 1,100 kids, and then you add on another 175 staff, that's nearly 1,200 devices that every day have to work. Every single day when I log on, it's got to be a secure work environment, but it's also got to be functioning. And so all the money and all the time and all the great things that happen on IT has to happen at the click of a button. And so hats off, Sean, Rocky, the two guys that are running ours, you know, they're running during test season too to make sure everything's up and going.
I bet they are. And, you know, technology is something, I mean, that's a fact of life. I mean, you get out in the workforce, you're gonna be using computers. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
But I think there's been a real focus kind of on getting back to some basics in education, like getting back to cursive writing and some things like that, hasn't it?
Yeah, you want to make sure that kids know how to have the adaptability of both. I don't think there's anything wrong. Right now, you guys can't see me, but Phil can. I'm holding a pencil. I'm holding a number 2 pencil because I like how a pencil feels in my hand. Now, I say I'm old. Some people will say, you're not that old. Well, I'm 57. You're right, I'm not that old, but it is the 35th year of being in education, so I kind of feel old after a while. But within that, I like a pencil. I like the way it moves. I like how it works on paper. I also like how that has processed in my head. I remember things better. I know that as a learner, I remember better if I write it down. So I will write things down, and that solidifies that process into my head so that it goes into my memory. And I think when it's on technology, we're finding that in kids' brain development, it doesn't get solidified into memory as quickly sometimes. So things on paper, things that are manipulatives like pens and pencils do add into working memory and then into long-term memory. And I think we're finding that just because it's fast, it's not good. So we have to slow down. We really do need to slow down and let our brains catch up sometimes. And I think that balance has to be there. It brings up artificial intelligence. We just had a training for all my staff on some artificial intelligence. And again, that's AI, as everybody calls it. It's a good thing. It can make things efficient. I have to teach kids what it is so that they don't get manipulated and into using it too much. I have to make sure the teachers understand it so that the kids don't know more than the teachers. But I don't want to overuse it. I don't think it has a huge role in our curriculum when we can solidify that kids working with paper, working with books, working with writing utensils can still gain more knowledge by using the manipulatives and cementing it into their working memory in different ways. So it's that balance, Phil. We got to find that balance between technology and what we call old school. And I frankly like old school, but some kids don't. And we have to find out the best ways to use their gifts too. So I guess we do need to understand them. That doesn't mean we have to use them every day, all day, and make sure that the kids are online all day. Because I don't think that's a true human experience. And I do believe education is a human experience. We've got to make sure that the teachers have the autonomy to plan good instruction that involves kids in true activities in the classroom.
Teachers have to be aware of how to catch somebody plagiarizing or whatever the case might be, because I understand you can write a paper through AI and say, make mistakes as somebody who is in 10th grade would make or you know, whatever. I mean, and so they can make it pretty believable.
They sure can. It makes cheating really easy. And so that's why the teachers need to be very aware of how a kid could cheat so they can make the kids prove it. It does get back to authentic assessment. So thinking about assessment, how do we test kids? You know, the standardized test that I just spoke of before as testing season, that is something that's very, very secure, right? It's on a state platform. When they log in, they're on a different system than ours, so they can't cheat, right? They don't know the answers. They can't cheat. They aren't allowed to have a phone. They aren't allowed to even look at the walls. Really, any kind of answers that a teacher would have on a poster, you're supposed to cover up. So that's a controlled testing environment. But let's say a basic essay. You know, they could go to AI, like you just said, and type into the prompt, hey, I need a reaction to Of Mice and Men. I need to have it from the perspective of, oh, Lenny. I need to make sure that it, you know, it's got 10 mistakes per page and I need it written from a 10th grader's perspective. Click, and it'll write a paper for them. And the teacher's got to know, oh, that's not that kid's work. That's somebody else's work. So it does demand that the teacher understands that, but it also demands that the teachers know their kids, right? And that we don't forget that human interaction. The other thing that we are seeing a lot of teachers bring back is that authentic assessment where give me a speech. Here's a blue book. Write down your essay in class right now. Use a pen or a pencil, get out some paper, and give me your response. Make sure that you're using correct standardized English. Make sure you're not making mistakes. Make sure that you're putting everything pen to paper and that you're doing that work now. Not later, not at home, but right now. And that is really causing kids some grief. Like, what do you mean? I have to remember this stuff and I have to do it right now? Yep, you do. And it takes me back to the late 80s where I was given this little blue book in a lot of my college courses and they said, okay, here's your prompt, write, you have an hour. You know, so it really does demand that working memory holds on to the content and that kids are ready to use that. So, and I think that's what we want for our workers. Ultimately, I'm trying to get kids ready to go out into society. And I think that's what any employer wants is somebody that can work on demand, that can take the good skills that we have and prove that they have that content knowledge. So I think we're getting back to it. I think we're excited about the great things that it offers, but also the great stuff that it doesn't offer and embracing the good things that we had before.
All right. We'll have more from Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley Administrator, right after this timeout. Our guest, Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley District Administrator today. And recently, Lauren, you guys had some emergency planning during one of your in-service days. And I think those are very important.
Yeah, I think people forget that the teachers have to be prepared for everything, right? Not only are they teaching lots of content, but they have that social emotional side of making sure that the kids feel safe, but they also have to be ready to respond on the drop of a dime. And so again, like, it's tornado season and we're worried about tornado season. And, you know, there could be storms even this afternoon. What if something happened in our atmosphere where we have to make sure that the kids are protected away from windows, where they're in a confined space, but they're safe, you know, so that a horrible storm could pass through in Spring Green. And so we've got to have that kind of emergency plan set in every building at all times. In the state of Wisconsin, we have a new emergency action kind of, I guess I'll call it a process. And I know it sounds a little goofy, but it's by a foundation that Wisconsin has adopted. It's called I Love You Guys Foundation. And that foundation has a standard response protocol for almost everything. So when I talk about tornadoes, that would mean that we would probably put the school on, a big word is called a hold. That means everybody goes to a classroom. Then in those classrooms, we have to kind of get ready for maybe an evacuation to a safe place. So that way we would say, okay, we're going to go to our tornado evacuation spaces. And we're going to start with these five classrooms first. That means we've identified in our building spaces that don't have windows, that are in the interior of a building or maybe the basement of a building. So if you're at the high school, you would go to locker rooms or go to interior rooms. In the middle school, we actually have locker rooms. Our old middle school, now the intermediate, has locker rooms and a basement, which has been turned into a middle school wrestling room, which is a great space for tornadoes. Or if you're in the elementary, you have to go really to the interior spaces or closets or bathrooms. And then you got to keep the kids quiet and contained and controlled. So, okay, I give you 20 kindergartners and I make you take 20 kindergartners into a bathroom and you have to keep them quiet and contained for 30 minutes while we run a drill. And you think, do you really have to do that? Yeah, we really have to do that. We have to be prepared for that. And so those are some of the things for like tornadoes we'll be practicing in the next couple of weeks. At a recent professional development, we had the teachers go through a recent scenario with us. And actually in the state of Wisconsin, it may sound a little goofy, but bus crashes are becoming something that we really have to be aware of. And so there was just a bus crash last week in the Madison Metropolitan School District where there was a dump truck that T-boned a bus. So all those kids on that bus then have to be taken to a safe site and they have to be reunified with their parents. Those kids have been through kind of a traumatic event. And so we've got to make sure that they're safe, that they get medical attention if it's necessary, and that we get those kids that don't need medical attention back to their parents for the afternoon or evening. There's a lot that goes into that. So recently, police liaison officer, Officer Andy Couric, helped us with this. And so a huge shout out to Andy Couric, as well as to Mr. Hegland. Mr. Hegland, our activities director, kind of is in charge of safety and security in our buildings as well. They ran a bus crash scenario. So just for fun, you guys, listen to this scenario. It's a normal winter day with Wisconsin weather and driving conditions. Overnight, the district of River Valley got 3 inches of snow and it's 20 degrees out. But the plows have been out and Mr. Glassbrenner did not cancel school.
Boo.
I know, boo. So snow plows have been out and a decision was made. Normal school day is made. This morning, though, at 7:35, this is a scenario again. Don't go crazy on me, folks. This is a scenario. A River Valley school bus with students on board was going southbound on County Highway 23 near WC, which is right on a curve, right on a downslide there, when the bus slid off the road and into a large ditch, traveling about 30 feet down an embankment and landed on its side. Now, the fire department, ambulances, and police have all arrived on the scene, as well as your district administrator, because in policy, my job is going to that scene and making sure that everybody is getting ready. So I have to go as this district administrator with the fire department, the ambulance, and the police to that scene. And we made sure there were no fatalities, but there were two kids that got injured in our scenario again. So, however, with these two students with minor injuries, they are being transported to the hospital. So I have to call an administrator and I have to send that administrator to Sauk Prairie Hospital to make sure that the kids and their families are taken care of. And beyond that, we have approximately 25 other kids. They're still on the bus. And now I have to get a bus from Lamers out to them. Dawn, thank God for Dawn, down at Lamer's bus, she sends a bus out and grabs these kids off the side of a road and gets them down to our campus. We need to reunify those kids now with their moms and dads. So we go through an entire reunification process where we have to count names, identify parents, and get them safely back to their families. It would be upon my River Valley principals then to pull staff members to run an entire reunification process for those 25 kids. So at our recent professional development, I had three different kind of roles that people got to play. And again, this is Andy and Jamie got this already. So thank you again, fellas. But within this reunification process, teachers got to play the role of the teachers that are assisting, or they got to take the role of reunifiers, meaning the emergency helpers that we need, or they got to play the role of kids. And those kids, of course, are scared. Some are crying, some are laughing, some are on their phones. It's all that process of making sure that after a bus accident, you can get the kids safely back to their parents. And that is something that in Wisconsin weather, we have to be aware of. And we had to run through it. And we let the teachers run through it three different ways so they could play all three of those different roles. And it was a really rewarding afternoon where teachers kind of get to feel what it's like to be in an emergency situation when nobody's, you know, nothing fatal has happened. So it's very safe, but it does bring up emotions, right? You know, parents are nervous and they're at the door and they're banging. So we had people playing angry parents, and then we have people playing naughty kids, and then we have people playing nervous teachers, and all of those things in that role play, I think, are really important for a district to understand, because beyond those tests, beyond the mandated standards, there's all these other human things that we do on a daily basis to make sure that we're doing our best for your public school kids. So again, it was really cool. It was a good scenario, and I think it's real. It's realistic training that all our staff need.
In a scenario like that, if you're a parent and you come in, I'm going to pick up the neighbor kids and take them home. You cannot in a situation like that.
No, you can't, Phil. Unless they're, let's say, Phil, you are an emergency contact for that kid. So in my SIS, which is the student information system, we call it a SIS, if it says Phil Nee can pick up Rachel Plottum, okay, then he's an emergency contact. We would have called the parent and they said, yes, I'm at work, I can't get there, but Phil Nee will be coming by and it's listed on my student information system. Yes, then you could. But you can't just on the whim pick up other kids. And when a parent comes, even though I know Phil Nee, he's at baseball games, he's at football games, he needs to bring a photo ID, because there's an entire legal process of taking a kid away from school, and we have to make sure it's with the right person. So bringing a photo ID always helps us too. Even though I know who you are, it's always just that reassurance that we are being really careful with reunifying kids with the right people.
Well, heaven forbid that ever happens, but it's good to be prepared.
Amen.
Right?
Amen. And we got to be prepared. So we run through stuff like that just to make sure that our staff are aware, that we're aware, and that we continue to teach our communities about like all the things that we're prepping, with the best scenario would be that we'd never have to use it.
It's hard to believe it's April and you'll be coming back, but I know you'll be talking about some summer school. That's not too far down the road, is it?
It is not too far down. It's amazing that we're really on the last 9 weeks, Phil. You know, we're almost to the 40-day countdown. And wow. So I know it's crazy, but there's about 40 days left of school. So we take these tests and then there's like 30 days to get all of this stuff done. So it's coming. And it's exciting. And it's also the same time that, you know, it's spring sports. And it's also the same time that it's prom and all these big things that happen in kids' lives. So we're excited for all the great things. We just want kids to remember that if, in fact, you need to come to summer school, we have that prepared as well. So summer school will happen in the River Valley School District. At our high school, the summer school is really credit recovery. Let's say you've had a really hard year. You didn't get everything done. You didn't pass sophomore English class. Well, guess what? Sophomore English class will be happening the following week at River Valley High School, and you come back and you work on sophomore English class until you do get it done. And that is called summer school. So there's all the summer school stuff that we offer at the high school is for credit recovery. At our junior high, what we're trying to do is we're trying to embed a new camp this year, and it's kind of like a STEM camp. What that would be is we're trying to get kids to understand what science, technology, engineering, maybe the things in the shop classes that they've never tried before, that they understand what those great offerings are. So we're kind of having an electives camp for our 6th and 7th graders as they become more aware of what high school elective courses will be. So we've got a camp for that. All that registration will be ready May 1st. than for our kids in the intermediate school. So that would be kids kind of in grades 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're going to have some other things offered, and we're going to finally get back to enrichment. We're going to have some fun classes, whether it's a class on Disney princesses or on softball. We're going to have those courses coming out, and that's going to be called basically elementary enrichment. And we're excited for that. We're also, though, out a brand new thing in River Valley that for 4 weeks we're going to offer Black Hawk's Nest. And what the Black Hawk's Nest is for students entering grades 1 through 4. It would be those kids that maybe parents need daycare, and they know their child needs some supervision in the summer, but they can't afford a great big camp somewhere. We're going to offer that at River Valley. And what that Black Hawk's Nest is going to do is for 4 different weeks during June and July, we will be taking kids on nature hikes. We'll be going to the public library. We'll be taking trips to our local pool. We'll be going to our local movie theater to watch a show. And we're really going to try to provide some care for our families that they need, really. And so that's something that's new and exciting for us. So we have basically a summer offering for every kid who's leaving kindergarten or leaving 11th grade. Our seniors, they're off, right? Everybody in between, there'll be a summer kind of activity that either you need or that we say you need. So we're excited for those new offerings. And again, families, check out local social media, and registration will be available May 1st. So I've got a few days before we have all that ready. So we're working hard to make sure everything is ready for y'all.
Thank you for all the information today, Lauren.
Yeah, we're excited. We got, you know, those 9 weeks are going to fly by, and it's going to be summer, and we're going to have those sunny days, and we're excited to continue to finish out the year at River Valley with a smile.
Great. We'll see you next month.
Thanks, Phil.
Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley District Administrator, on today's morning show.